It actually took many thousands of years for humanity to develop into civilized human beings. Some learned faster than others. When the representatives of the Great Ones from the other star systems had agreed to come down to live on planet Earth, there was much uplifting energy focused on each one. This was intended to cheer them up during their difficult assignments as fully established human beings upon the Earth. During their first few lifetimes, these special representatives did not remember any of their previous experiences in the colony of love and light. Before they incarnated on planet Earth, they had agreed that this kind of amnesia was necessary for them to integrate into the general population. The most notable thing about all of them was their hunger for knowledge. Through the help of the Great Ones from the stars, they were given the inspiration of creating a method of writing. The new humanity that emerged was overjoyed at this newfound ability. They began working to create books filled to the brim with information of the culture they formed themselves in. This would preserve information for those who would come after them. As she spoke, there appeared pictures of people reading books at long tables. These starseed would often receive information and encouragement in their dreams, so that they would have the courage and an initiative to develop the trappings of civilization in the face of the great inertia upon the Earth. The Great Ones from the colony of love and light continued focusing the highest vibrations of peace and harmony throughout the land. As soon as humanity was ready for it, some additional members of the colony made the decision to lower their vibrations somewhat so that they could exist on the Earth and provide more direct guidance and inspiration to all of humanity. This was how the civilization of Atlantis began. It was created in the middle of a great land which existed between what you now call the Old World and the New World. Within it, they created an island surrounded by water in a moat. There were four bridges that were attuned to the four cardinal directions. There they built their temple with the highest of vibrations, and there they lived. The ordinary level of humanity could only see them as a great light, but they sensed the wisdom and power that emanated from them and the island where they lived. The education of humanity continued for many thousands of years in many lifetimes. In order to make living less difficult for all of humanity, they created a crystal of great power, which began to be used for energy and power for humanity to use. Beyond the water-filled moat, they built an island ring. Those of humanity who had more advanced knowledge and vibrations could live and work there. The average human being could not tolerate even this higher level of vibration for very long at a time. They could be near the great city center, but they were not yet able to stand the high level of vibrations for very long at a time. The glowing island in the center and the ring of land around it had a pearl-scent glow. This gave them both a misty look so that they looked surreal. She continued, "The colony began establishing schools for all the people. The people were carefully taught subjects that made them useful members of society. It was considered important that they be taught to be responsible citizens, caring for their neighbors when they were sick. They also learned about their origins as individual outpourings of the source of all that is. Much time was spent teaching what you might consider to be philosophy, morality, and responsibility to the community. Over many lifetimes, these schools gradually evolved into universities where healing of the body and mind was taught, where chemistry, physics, and the laws of the universe were explained. The arts were not neglected either. Painting, interior decoration, architecture, and music were added to the curriculum as subjects when students appeared who were capable of assimilating them. Craftsmen's guilds were established at an early stage on Atlantis so that a master craftsman could take in apprentices for a period of time. He taught them his secrets of the arts. These different guilds included fine gold working, jewelry making, woodworking, fine pottery making, and glass blowing. In turn, the apprentices promised not to divulge these secrets to those outside the master's shop or the guild. The purpose of this secrecy was so that the quality of work could be maintained, and the marketplace would not be diluted by items of careless workmanship. This way, the quality was assured. It also assured that a master craftsman had enough work to do and had enough items to sell so they could live in comfort and plan for their retirement. After a period of time had passed, an apprentice who was working for a master craftsman who had come in as an unskilled beginner might be allowed to set up a separate shop of his own. He had to apply for permission from both the master whom he worked for and the guild to which he belonged. In the future he would always be subject to the regulations of the other members of that specialized guild. The apprentice then became a master craftsman himself. They were allowed to take on a certain number of apprentices themselves to teach the correct methods of creation of their particular craft. These plans fulfilled the needs of the growing civilization. The important things the guilds did was to allow specialization in each craft, maintain high levels of quality and leisure that there was sufficient income for each person who worked in that craft. As they neared the end of their lifetime, the master craftsman usually selected someone to take his place in the future. Usually this was a son or close relative that would take over the responsibilities of the master at his death. It was important that the standards of artistry and creation be maintained. These standards had been taught by the great ones when the guilds were first established. They had been established with much hard work and struggle on the part of humanity and were to be guarded from degradation from within. Specialization became a fact of life. At the same tune, the general public's appreciation for the items that the guilds had created was very great. Much money was exchanged for these items, as even those who did not know how to do this work, appreciated the quality of the work that was produced. Healing temples of various kinds were established where people came to have their physical bodies cleansed of disease. There was just as much attention paid to those of humanity who had emotional difficulties, including selfishness, greed, and hunger for power over their fellow man. Laziness was considered to be an illness and people were brought here to have it treated. There was counseling and also treatment of the centers of the brain by rays of light and special energy, to eliminate attitudes of slothfulness. The video showed persons seated, wearing helmets that had numerous wires coming out of them. The healers attending them were watching video monitors of the brain activity. Then the scene shifted to where other individuals were on a moving table that passed through a cavity in a large machine. This was a lot like the magnetic resonance imaging, MRI, equipment we have today on Earth. This focused various kinds of energy on the whole body to remove toxins from the physical body and also to remove toxic thoughts. When the individuals had learned to be responsible members of the community, they were returned to take their proper place in their community again. Everyone rejoiced at their return. At the same time that the arts were being taught, great love was being beamed on all of the surrounding humanity. They were taught how to get along with one another, using a political organization whose philosophy was that of genuine concern for their fellow man. The people learned that the only way to have an advanced society was to have laws, and to understand the punishments for breaking these laws. There was not the motivation to get around the laws because they represented justice and an organized society. As a result, those who did commit crimes were considered to be in. After being taken into custody, they were given considerable training in responsibility. There came into being certain specialized temples, where the maladies of the mind and criminal tendencies were removed. In addition to counseling, the bodies of these people underwent the projection of various frequencies, intended to balance the brain permanently towards higher qualities and the greater good of society. People with afflictions of the body were cared for in a number of creative ways. Light and sound were used to heal the body, along with the release of unnecessary pressure, which is sometimes called stress. People were taught which foods to eat so that the proper nutrition of the body was met. These were mostly simple foods, raw foods, as fresh as possible. Truly, they were taught that they must eat well that they might live well. Many people were taught about the healing powers in herbs. They were sent back to their homes to teach others that everything that grew around them had a purpose. Often a healing purpose could be discovered in some unlovely but very useful plants previously thought of as weeds. This is the only time that people taught each other without constant monitoring by the great ones. The plants themselves would teach the student of the law of plants. The method either worked or it didn't. It either made them better or it made them worse. The plants were excellent teachers in their own right. The video showed open shelters which had bundles of herbs tied on strings and hanging from the rafters to dry in the open air and shade. A woman walked among them checking to see how the drying process was proceeding. The Great Ones sometimes shared information about the rejuvenation of the physical body. Many people were fair to look upon because the healers were able to bring out the best appearance in everyone. When they were healed of physical problems, people took their rightful places in a productive society again. To do others would have been unthinkable. Because of all these teachings, peace reigned on Atlantis for thousands of years. Emissaries from many lands on the Earth came to study the methods used on Atlantis. Atlantis was considered by some of the civilizations on other planets, among the stars, to be a golden land. For this reason, even representatives from other planets in other star systems who arrived in lighter-than-air craft visited Atlantis to study this social experiment. They all returned to their home with ideas to be incorporated into their own cultures. She shifted our attention to a beautiful pink limestone building in the distance. The whole concept of architecture was planned to help harmonize the body. Round buildings work best for this, as energy does not get stuck in the corners of a room. Even in your society of today, governments have not forgotten this concept, and their highest assembly halls in the land are usually round. This concept is also still held by some of the native cultures as well in building their dwellings and community halls. A building that is useful should be beautiful as well. With the power crystal in operation governing the weather, most of the continent of Atlantis was in a temperate climate. Therefore, many of the buildings were painted white or pastel colors to reflect the heat of the sun during the day. Some of them had a gold trim painted at the roof line. The demeanor of the narrator changed and she spoke on a more personal basis. "Now let me take you into one of our temples of healing and show you a ceremony which is in progress." She led the way up steps to a beautiful open portico of a round temple. The doors opened inside the temple to a large open room. There were doors all around the circumference, to other smaller assembly rooms. The room was painted white and decorated with pink and gold trim, and even some crystalline material was in evidence. "Insert picture." I sat bolt upright in my seat. It suddenly looked very familiar. In the center of the room was a long marble table supported by a single round tapered pedestal. This is the transition table. This method of treatment was developed here in Atlantis, we are happy to say. Atlantis is greatly respected for having it located here. In addition to being a work of art, the table radiated power. Obviously, it was the center of attention for the whole building. I couldn't take my eyes off it. I lost track of what the lady was saying. My memory began to fade as I suddenly returned back to the physical world of Earth. A loud noise outside my bedroom window had summoned my body back to my place on Earth. I was now wide awake. I found myself thinking back over the temple and its ceremony, very often long after the video was over. One evening during meditation down in Earth space, with a group of other people, a vision came to me. It was so very real, so full of vibrant colors. I saw a ceremony of transition like what I had seen in the video of ancient to Atlantean times. Those conducting the ceremony were also my friends in the present day. However, they had also been the ones who had acted as priestess and priest in ancient to Atlantis. The room was circular and it had indirect lighting that had a pearl scent quality to it. There was a table in the center of the room that was draped in royal purple with a gold fringe. The purpose of this was to cover a warming pad that would heat the marble table underneath it to body temperature. The individual who had decided that their life's purpose had been served, or whose physical body was worn out beyond the level of comfort, had made arrangements to make their transition into spirit here. Selected members of the family were invited. Usually this was limited to not more than 3 to 10 people who could be present. They met with the individual in a small reception room off the large circular room. There they had a chance to say their goodbyes. In truth, it was bon voyage to the individual. It was a joyous occasion, not a sad one. The individual had a small chest or jewel box with them. They opened it and in it were favorite bracelets, rings, or pendants worn during their lifetime. The individual presented these as individual gifts to those gathered there. They said that they had no use for these treasures of Earth in the place where they were going. Each family member or friend received these gifts with great joy and hugs shared. It was optional as to whether the group would share a sip of wine from the same cup all around, but there was no food eaten. That would make the transition too difficult to accomplish. Then the individual went to a special shower room and took a shower. Afterwards, they were given a soft blue towel to dry off with and told to remember that color and to take the memory of that color with them into the ceremony. They were helped into a simple white cotton shift. Actually, it was simply a bug piece of fabric seamed at the sides with a hole cut out for the neck. The only adornment on it was a frog type closing at chest level that had the loop design that is popular in the Orient. They were escorted out to the center of the room where the table was. As soon as they began walking to the center of the room, beautiful ethereal music began playing softly, seeming to come from all sides of the room and from overhead. The friends and family were allowed to enter the large circular room, but they were instructed to stay outside the perimeter marked by a stripe on the floor. This mark defined the extent to which the forthcoming energies would extend. This was allowed so they could stay and watch the ceremony if they desired to do so. The purple covering was pulled off of the table and the individual was assisted to lie down on the marble table. It was now at body temperature, so there would be no shock to the system of the individual lying on it. The attendants then retreated from the table. Then the priestess and priest of that temple came out. They were both dressed in long white robes. They began invoking the light of spiritual life to come down and focus on the individual. The priestess gently laid her hands on the individual's chest while she prayed quietly for peace and light to enter the individual's body. There was the fragrance of sacred incense as the priest invoked words of power in ancient rituals. He used the ankh in the rituals of times gone by, passing it over the individual from head to foot. The individual lying on the table was totally at peace and in joy as they were being attended by the two persons who would midwife them into spirit. Slowly there appeared more light in the room. It poured onto the individual lying on the table. The person became lighter and lighter, and finally they appeared to glow. They were at utter peace. The music continued, as did the quiet prayers and rituals of the two, priest and priestess. Nothing else was heard. The individual on the table continued to glow with more and more light. To those who had the inner sight, there began to become visible white-robed figures descending to stand next to the priestess and priest and the individual on the table. As the light increased, it became harder and harder to see the individual and the figures of the angels and their guides who had come to meet the individual. Soon nothing but a white mist was visible. Gradually the mist rose. It passed through the ceiling. When it had disappeared, there was nothing left on the table, not the individual, nor their clothing. Everything had been translated into light as they made their transition. The music gradually faded into the background and the friends and family stirred and turned to leave the circular room. The priestess and priest, dressed in their white robes, remained in meditation, standing on either side of the table until all of the family members remaining had departed. They completed the final ritual to clear the table of the energies of the transition just completed. They then brought down the high level of spiritual energies that had been used in the ceremony for transition and which had been anchored to the table. I was in awe as I witnessed this ancient ceremony, which was once used in Atlantis with the full awareness and consent of the individual. What made it even more awe-inspiring was that my two friends from 20th century Earth were recast in their original roles from Atlantis. I spoke with each of them later and they both confirmed that they remembered that in ancient times they had performed such a ceremony. Note: the vision of this ceremony took place in my meditation down here in Earth space on January 27, 1995. Chapter 9 J. Many. I always looked forward to my nighttime visits to the mothership when I would be fleeing of the physical body. They were times of great adventure, meeting new people that always seemed to look familiar. But then I remembered an old friend. Jaimini was the first person I had met when I appeared on the mothership. We had nearly collided in the supply room. He was a vibrant personality, always on the move. He was slender, a little taller than I was. He had medium brown hair that he wore in a pageboy style. It was not until later that I learned that he also had pointed ears, in the style of Mr. Spock on Star Trek. But there the similarity ended. Jaimini was full of energy, cheerful, and always planning something new. It was fun to be around him. One evening I went looking for him, but he was nowhere to be found. "Where is Jaimini?" I never see him anymore, I asked. I was informed he was down on Earth on a mission. A mission? He has gone down to Earth? What kind of an Earth mission is it? The person stopped their work long enough to say, well, he is good at finding plants and other things that are needed by the mothership. What do you need plants from Earth for up here on the mothership? I persisted, we use them for establishing plant life on new planets. Then the person disappeared abruptly. HMM. I had never given any thought to the idea that the mothership might have another mission, in addition to that of just watching over the Earth and its inhabitants. I was embarrassed at my self-centered attitude. I should have realized that the mothership might have a wider purpose to be in this part of the solar system. My respect for the residents of the mothership grew. But still I didn't see Jaimini anywhere around. Then one evening I saw Jaimini at a distance. I waved and headed towards him. He looked tired. He was wearing blue denim pants and a khaki shirt, a most unusual outfit for people on the mothership. There were dirt smudges on his clothes. He waved back, but then he opened a door, went inside and shut it. When I tried to follow him, I found the door was locked. By this time I had learned not to get my feelings hurt when I encountered an obstacle, but still I was curious about the room. I waited for a friend I knew and asked what was in the room. On that's the detoxification room. Jaimini heads there as soon as he comes back from an Earth mission. He spends as much as 2 to 4 days and nights in that detox room getting all the bad stuff washed out of his system. It depends where he has been. He should be out in a few more days and nights. Look for him then. Really? Well, what about me? I'm from Earth too. This brought a chuckle. True. But first of all, you are used to all that toxicity on Earth. It doesn't affect you as strongly as it affects us. Then again, when you are up here in your present form, you don't bring along any diseases or pollution. Remember when you were brought up in physical form to be worked on in the crystal box? You were taken right back to Earth afterwards. The room you had been in was purified and detoxified after you left. Oh, I never thought about that. You don't need to worry about it. We took care of any problems, but we did have a responsibility to the rest of the ship. We didn't tell you then because we didn't want you to get your feelings hurt. But it's all right for you to know it now. Besides, you wouldn't need the detoxification that we would need, because you are used to the pollution on Earth. I may be used to it, yes, but I don't like it very much either. Petroleum fumes, stale cigarette smoke, but the smell of insecticides is the worst. I wrinkled up my nose. There are times when I smell that awful insecticide that I think I must have been an insect in a prior lifetime. This brought a hearty laugh from my Pleiadian friend. Well, we have never developed a tolerance for any of Earth's pollution up here. When any of our people are down in Earth's atmosphere for any length of time, they cannot help but pick up some of its pollution. Going through the detoxification room, we are able to get rid of everything you mentioned. Our respiratory system has to be thoroughly cleansed, as well as our muscles. Jaimini will also be receiving a series of massages to help work the toxics out of his muscles. Then, of course, there are those poisonous electromagnetic energies that disrupt the heart and the endocrine system. You may not realize it, but your present technology that uses the electromagnetic energies on Terra distorts the life force energy that you call ki or prana. Your television sets and their towers, your radio, radar and microwave towers, and now your cellular telephone towers generate an electromagnetic pollution that you can see when you are in the middle of it. However, for us, these are frequencies that are devastating to our bodies. It even breaks our cells apart. They have to be rebuilt. The speaker paused a moment. You Earthlings haven't been told yet, but these frequencies slow you down a lot, and if you get too much of them, they can even generate cancers. They mess up your cardiovascular system too. This poisonous energy could be cleaned up, but those who create it don't want to have to be responsible for it. They would rather pretend it doesn't exist. I paused, pondering what he had just said. I knew he was right. A lot of us here in the mothership admire Jaimini for continuing to go down to planet Earth in the middle of all that pollution, seen and unseen. He goes down there more often than anyone here. A lot of us wouldn't care to go down there. Lieutenant's risky in more ways than one. We risk being taken in by someone who doesn't know why we are there, first of all. He shifted nervously for a moment. I know. I went down with Jaimini once on a plant-gathering expedition. I was worried all the time we were there. Then on our return to the mothership we both went through this detoxification process and we were checked to see if any of our cells needed to be rebuilt. We wouldn't be able to do our work unless we had this done. If we didn't, then we would be subject to the same aging processes that you are. He shrugged his shoulders, but I was in a bit of a shock. He just raised an eyebrow and he walked away. I had mixed feelings about the influence of Earth upon these people. I loved my home, but I was only too aware of the energies that contaminated our daily lives. The next time I saw Jaimini, he was in the center of a controversy. He was in the middle of about 6 or 8 people. It was the first time I had ever heard any of the Pleiadians raise their voices on the mothership. Jaimini was surrounded, and looking somewhat defensive. He was just standing there clutching something. You have to take it back, Jaimini. But I haven't been able to find any of them for quite a while. Then I found this one. We need them, you know that, Jaimini protested. Telepathically I learned that Jaimini had found a kitten by a house and had brought it up with him when he returned from Earth. His mission that time had been to find cats that survey teams from the mothership would then be able to put on developing planets. It seemed that after various kinds of plants and trees had been started on a planet, herbivores like small in ice and even rats were added to help keep the plant growth under control. They multiplied very quickly though, and this could create a problem in balance. Small domestic type cats were then needed to keep the burgeoning population of rats and mice under control. They didn't want the new planet overrun with lots of rodents. But this time the situation was different. The problem was about where Jaimini had found the kitten. He had taken a little girl's pet kitten. The little girl was crying because she missed her kitten. The kitten was crying with loneliness as well. Everyone on the mothership knew that the little girl missed the kitten very much. The people clustered around Jaimini were saying that this was not fair to either the little girl or to the kitten. They were trying to convince Jaimini to take the kitten back to the little girl. You've got to take it back. You can I keep it here. Be lit, we need cats for the new planets. Jaimini protested. I decided to step in. I said, Jaimini, there are places on Earth where you can find cats, nice cats, that are just as good as this one. Many cities on Earth, at least in my country, have places called the Humane Society. When animals stray away from their homes and are just wandering around a neighborhood, they are picked up and led waiting for their owners to come and pick them up. I paused, trying to figure out how to say it gently. If their owners don't call for them by a certain length of time, or if people don't come in looking for a pet for their home, then the cats are either disposed of or turned over to agencies for medical experimentation. A collective gasp of horror went up from the group listening. They didn't like either one of these ideas. The fate awaiting these animals was something they hated to think about. I hurried on, Jaimini, I can show you the place where you can get whatever cats that you used. Right in the city where I live. Just be sure and take only the ones that have been there the longest time in case their owners still want to come and get them. Don't take too many of the cats at one time so that the people who work there won't get upset if they can't be accounted for. Mentally I made a map for Jaimini with the streets highlighted. I even told them that I had gotten a happy to adopt there myself once. Jaimini relaxed when he heard where he could get cats in the future. He then agreed to take the kitten back to where he found it. There was one happy little girl when she heard her kitten mewing at her back door. Jaimini brought back the telepathic image for us all to share and everyone cheered. Jaimini continued going down on his cat rescue mission, as he called it. He might bring back one or two at a time. His face would be a mixture of joy and despair. The gathering of all the animals, dogs and cats, in their pens upset him when he thought of the fate waiting for them. Here's another cat I snatched out of the jaws of medical experimentation, he crowed. As for me, I was happy to be able to contribute useful information to my friend Jaimini. Then too I could save at least a few animals from pain or death. I hope this information doesn't get me in trouble with any human society now. One evening I finally caught up with Jaminy. Oh, there you are. What are you looking for when you are down on Earth? I asked.